Welcome back, everyone. This week on Click, we're going to be giving a recap on the iPhone event and our take on the key announcements Apple made, including which iPhone's right for you. And that'll be it. All right. How are we going, Kai?
Yeah, good. We just had the Apple event, and I'm particularly interested in this one because it's time to upgrade my iPhone. So I'm really keen to talk about this one and get your thoughts about it, Stephen.
Yeah, no, it was an interesting one. Obviously delayed since September. First time we've had one announced in October. I mean, we've had a couple of product launches in October where they don't go on sale or you can't get your hands on them until October. But this year they've actually pushed it back, and it was a much shorter event because normally they cram Apple Watch, iPad, iPhone, everything all into one. But yeah, this one was pretty much focused on the iPhone.
Yeah, that's right. And I guess, you know, with COVID and everything affecting supply chain, that's, you know, it makes sense that things are being delayed.
Yeah, fair enough. Now, so before we get stuck into the Apple event, I guess it's probably worth touching on that since we last recorded, Microsoft announced a couple of new services. They've launched a faster Surface Pro X, which is, I guess, in my view, their non-laptop tablet. So this is essentially their iPad equivalent in the Surface lineup. It's not really meant for work, at least in my opinion anyway. Someone's going to shoot me for that. But it's, I guess, targeted at more lightweight users that don't need to do much doing on their machines. Kai, have you, I'm not sure if you follow the Surface lineup that closely. Have you seen that?
Yeah, no, I had a quick look at the Surface Pro X when it first came out last year. And it was, I think it was the first Surface Pro that came out with their own chips. And they were claiming, you know, really good battery life. It's still mobile. It's still really good for work. And I just wonder how much they've improved on their chipsets. Because there was always a bit of, you know, skepticism, especially when people move away from their Intel chipsets, around how reliable, how it will perform when you're doing heavy Excel tasks, for example.
Yeah, I honestly don't know if anyone's bought one though. I haven't seen anyone, although I haven't really seen anyone this year, to be honest, because of COVID, but I haven't seen anyone use it or heard of anyone that's used it. It just sounds like a product they launched, but maybe it just needs a little bit of time in the market before it gets some traction.
Yeah, no, that's right. And just looking at how they're marketing it, you know, ultra thin, always connected, it just sounds like it is something that's targeted more at the iPad Pro market. Mm. In the sense that, you know, if you are going to be doing heavy, you know, intensive work on your computer, you would still go for the more traditional Surface Pro lineups.
Yeah, it'll be interesting how they've repurposed Windows to be a bit less of a, I guess, workhorse focused. I mean, it is very much productivity based versus macOS, which isn't necessarily. I mean, Microsoft and Windows is very much corporate now for businesses rather than personal use. So I want to see how they translate that to the tablet market, because last time they tried to make a tablet OS in, I think it was Windows RT or whatever it was called. It was bad. Not very good at all.
Yeah, no, that's right. And I do wonder how people would think about the Surface Pro X, especially for people who have a Surface Pro like 7 or a 6, because it doesn't seem overly different from a Surface Pro X. You know, it's still fairly portable, still has a pen and a, you know, a fairly portable design. So it'd be interesting to see what that mind frame is.
Yeah, I think the only difference is that it's lighter, right? I mean, that's if you had to explain to someone else, it's just that it's lighter.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. I mean, just to close that out on the Surface front, they've also announced the Surface Laptop Go. So for those who are tuned into the Surface lineup, they have their Surface laptops, which are the traditional clamshell laptops, I guess, that compete with, in terms of Apple land, the MacBook Air. This one's, I guess, a smaller one, sitting at 12.5 inches. Really good price point, though, to be honest, at $999. So that's, I think this is really trying to target that student segment or that really light user base. And as the name suggests, it's a laptop, not a tablet, so it's not like the Surface Pros.
Yeah, and I could be wrong, but I remember the original Surface Go seemed to be more priced towards the Chromebook markets, so the really cheap, the lower price point computers that people need for, you know, the uni, et cetera.
Yeah, I mean, at $999, it's not cheap, but compared to everything else, it's an entry-level laptop. It's not a fully fledged, you know, workhorse machine like a MacBook Pro or even a Surface Pro or the Surface. What's the huge Surface called? The Surface Book, their weird snake neck thing. All right, so I think that's enough on Microsoft before my stomach starts to turn anymore. Let's get straight stuck into the Apple event. So November 14, 4 a.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time. I know I got up, and I think you got up as well, Kai, to watch Tim Cook get on stage.
Yes, I did. It was the first time I've woken up to watch it live. Pity that there wasn't a crowd or any live presentation. It was very much recorded, and all I heard was 5G. 5G, Steve.
Yeah, I know. I don't know if I sent you that video where someone literally cut out every 5G little snippet that they said, and it was just one of the funniest things I've ever seen. Yeah, but this year it was at 4 a.m. Normally, I think, because I've tuned in, for better or for worse, for the last 5 or 6 years now. Normally, I think they're at 2 or 3 a.m. as well. So this year, I mean, lucky you joined in this year because it was a little bit later. But no, it was a really good one. They announced 5 new products. The HomePod Mini, iPhone 12, the 12 Mini, the 12 Pro, and the 12 Pro Max. Obviously, they're all the iPhones. Much smaller event, like I said before, very much focused on the iPhones. Funny that they tacked on the HomePod Mini and they didn't tack on anything else. So it was just focused on that. But yeah, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought, you know, in terms of the HomePod Mini, whether you could actually... whether they could have actually released that earlier, you know, with the iPad Pros and the Apple Watch. But I guess it's more than just the mini product itself. It was very much the we're coming back, we're having another stab at your home integration and being more, having a bigger presence in your home setup, your smart home setup. So yeah, I thought it needed that presentation, but it was interesting to see them kind of go into that, but not really go into the other things that we were expecting as part of their music kind of lineup.
Yeah, I mean, the HomePod Mini, I think other than the iPhones, which are obviously great and we'll get into after, I think the HomePod Mini may have actually been the game-changing product that they announced at the event. I mean, in essence, it's a smaller version of the HomePod. It's a round shape rather than that cylindrical shape now. It still focuses on sound quality as a differentiator, for better or for worse. I mean, I don't think they can hang their hat on Siri, because let's be honest, Siri still sucks. But at a price point of $149 now, it's quite compelling, because if you compare that to what the HomePod was at $469 last time I checked on the Apple Store, they've reduced the price by almost a factor of 3. And so if this at this price point, it starts to become much more affordable, so everyone can actually start to buy them and, I guess, dot them around their house, the value proposition of the HomePod and the Apple ecosystem and, I guess, them building a stranglehold or hold in the home space just becomes stronger now.
Yeah, and it also sounds like they've invested a lot of time and resources into making sure the entire ecosystem integrates together with the HomePod Mini. It'd be pretty cool to see what happens with how it integrates with CarPlay.
Yeah, true. The CarPlay thing was interesting. I mean, they kind of folded that in, and I was surprised that they did.
Yeah, because that's still kind of dependent on your phone as well, right? So it's effectively just syncing with your phone.
Yeah, at the end of the day, I still think Apple's ecosystem is way too dependent on the phone. I mean, the ecosystem is what keeps them strong, right? That's what keeps us as sticky customers. But they need to find a way to start moving people off, not off the iPhone, but for those who don't have an iPhone to still be able to take advantage of, or to become a customer of HomePod and their HomeKit sort of suite of products. Because I guess ideally they want everyone to be part of everything, because then they can suck the most money out of you. But, you know, I think they've got to acknowledge that there's a whole huge chunk of the market that is never going to buy an iPhone, but may consider these home products. And yeah, and so I think, I mean, the HomePod Mini felt like it should have been the product they announced from the start. I mean, at $469 for a smart speaker, the original HomePod, way too expensive. I mean, most people would never even think of that. I mean, most people balk at a couple, like $100 or $200 for a speaker. And those who even think about smart speakers, who look at, you know, the Google, what's it called? Is it the Google Home or the Google Home Mini, the Amazon Echo Dots? They're like sub $100 price points. And so with Apple coming in with the $400, I think at the point when they released it was $499, a $500 speaker was absolutely insane.
Yeah, no, that's right. But to your point earlier, though, I think Apple went in with a very different mindset and different lens to the smart speaker landscape. So they went in, you know, they obviously invested a lot in making, you know, really good product in terms of sound quality. Whereas your Googles and your Amazons, they're really just trying to get in your home and try to have a bit more of a smart speaker, you know, automation functionality than the sound quality focus.
Well, yeah, like I said, Siri is absolute trash, and they couldn't hang their hat on it, and they had to find a way to be different, because, you know, like you said, Amazon and Echo were already in the market. But yeah, this feels much more compelling now. And as much as I love my full-size HomePod and the sound quality that it spits out, if I could trade that for a HomePod Mini, I would 100% do that. I'd rather 3 HomePod Minis than 1 huge HomePod right now.
Yeah, and let's be honest here, Steve, you're still going to buy 3 HomePod minis.
Look, I barely use my HomePod, I'm not going to lie. It's sitting here next to me looking nice and pretty, but I rarely use it. I mean, it does just make great sound quality. But I guess, you know, having a couple of HomePods and the same music playing around the house does sound pretty cool.
Yeah, no doubt. And just being connected to your HomePod without having your phone around. So, you know, if you're out at home doing chores, it's just nice to know that, you know, you could still get Siri to give someone a call without actually having your phone stuck around. So that's quite handy.
Yeah, I mean, I've used the HomePod for calls and people don't even notice. And it's great because the HomePod mics are so strong. Like, you could say, "Hey, Siri," and I think I just set it off. But, "Hey, Siri," across the room, and oh, it really did go off, damn. And, you know, it could be whisper quiet whilst there's background noise, and it still picks it up. Like, the microphones on these are really good. And I do want to see whether they sacrificed any of that on the HomePod Mini, because obviously it's a much lower price point. I want to see how they, I guess, played with the speaker system and the mic system to bring that price point down. But, I mean, it looks like, theoretically, they may be onto a winner here. The question is, are they too late? And whether people already are entrenched in the HomePod, Amazon, or not the HomePod, the Google or the Amazon ecosystem already.
Yeah, and I wonder that if that played into their price point as well, because $149, is fairly affordable compared to the HomePod, the original HomePod.
Yeah.
So I'll definitely be getting one to try that.
Yeah, I really want to get my hands on one. I mean, $149. I mean, it's still expensive for a smart speaker, but you know, both of us already have the HomePod. It might be worth just getting it to have, you know, to see how it works.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, but what I found really cool was the intercom thing. You know, so what they announced was, I mean, this is software based, and I'm not sure whether this, if you have multiple HomePods, it applies as well. So we've got to look into that. But basically, if you have multiple HomePods around the house, you can just say, I'm not going to say it anymore. I'm going to say, "Hey, Kai," to Siri. And then you can say, "Tell everyone, you know, it's dinner." And then through every HomePod in the house, it just announces that message that you just made. It's kind of overlordish, to be honest, but it is so cool. I loved it.
Yeah. It does remind me of the walkie-talkie feature in your Apple Watch.
Yeah. Have you ever used that though?
I played around with it. It's not the most seamless app because, you know, you obviously turn it off because you don't want some random mate to call out in the middle of a meeting.
I do that.
So because you have to turn it on and because you need someone else to turn it on as well, it's much easier to just give someone a call.
Yeah, it's not like, that's the thing. I wish it sounded so good in theory, but it's so cumbersome to set up. Like, if I want to walkie talk with you, I have to send you a request. Often takes a while. By the time you get it, it's like, well, the moment's gone. What's the point?
Yeah. Exactly. I guess if you were maybe on a road trip with two separate cars, so you actually needed a walkie-talkie, for example, to communicate between cars, that could be handy. But I struggle to think of any other kind of use cases for that.
Yeah, well, we're not going on any road trips anytime soon. Dan made it clear that nothing's opening up yet for at least another couple of weeks. So, not yet. Not quite. But, maybe. We should try it out one day. Maybe we're going to go for a ride or something.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to the iPhone lineup, which was really the key thing for the event. I mean, it is the iPhone event, despite the HomePod being inserted in there at the start. I guess the headline feature was 5G. 5G and a little bit more 5G. So in case you missed it, all the new iPhone 2020 lineup has 5G support now. And they announced 4 new models. So just to give that a recap again, you got the iPhone 12, you got the iPhone 12 mini, you've got the 12 Pro Max. Oh, damn. And the 12 Pro. Completely forgot about that one. and so I guess headline, like I said, they've got 5G support now. They've got a really cool new flat side design. So they've brought back essentially what they did. I think it was the iPhone 4 and the iPhone 5.
Yep, that's right. Started with the iPhone 4 and then, they kept it with the iPhone 5 as well. And now it's back again.
Yep. So getting rid of those ugly curved edges now that I think always made the iPhone look a bit fat, to be honest. But anyway, I really like the new flat-sided design. They've introduced OLED screens now across the board. So every iPhone has the same screen now, apparently. They're all OLED. And so it's basically the screen that the pros used to have that the regular lineup didn't. They brought that to be consistent across the lineup. So a lot of parity this year, as you'll start to see as we get into the iPhone models between the 12, 12 mini, Pro, and the Pro Max. There's a lot of features that really are the same, that makes the decision even harder this year.
Yeah, that's right. So as well as looking through it, that was probably the biggest surprise for me. So, you know, with the lineups, the rumors were pretty accurate this time around. But what caught me off guard was the OLED screens for the 12 and the 12 mini. And, you know, that's usually, you know, one of the larger cost factors into the production of these iPhones. And so that's usually a differentiator between the 12s and the Pros, because that, you know, it helps them differentiate the price a little bit more. So it's refreshing to see that they've put OLEDs in the 12s as well, and also 5G across the whole line. And given all that, they haven't really upped the price significantly for the 12 and 12 mini either. And they've kept it constant, or I think slightly cheaper for the Pro and Pro Max, right?
Yeah, no, I think, yeah, the 12 and 12, well, there wasn't a 12 mini, but the 12 at least, I think it's a little bit more expensive. I think it's $50 more expensive than last year. The Pro and the Pro Max are cheaper, which I was surprised on. If anything, I thought they'd keep the 12 the same and keep pushing up the higher end of the market. I mean, they've got this uncanny ability to really push the edge in terms of how much are we willing to pay for an iPhone. I mean, you know, go back 5 years, saying $2,000 for a phone, people say you're absolutely nuts. They push the phone, the price up to $2,000, and everyone's like running out of their houses to, you know, give them their money. It's like $2,000 here, take it. Here, do you want more? I'll give you three. It's like it's ridiculous. I'm one of those suckers, but the way they've been able to increase the prices and just not face backlash over it has been amazing.
Yeah, so I do wonder, you know, how well from, you know, just based on the iPhone 11 sales, the Pros and the Pro Max sold in terms of volume, and I wonder how, like, was that a decision behind them not trying to up the price?
Yeah, well, I think last year they started to get to almost feature parity across the line last year. Not so much yet. I mean, the 11 was such a good proposition last year. So not the Pro or the Pro Max last year, just the iPhone normal 11. It was such a good proposition that was the phone I was telling people to get. I wasn't actually telling people to go for the Pros or the Pro Max unless A, they had money that they just wanted to spend, or B, they really valued a really good camera. But the core camera, the main normal camera lens on the 11 and versus the Pros was the same, I think, as well. So the 11 or the 11 or the 12 this year really is supposed to be that mainstream phone that I think 80-90% of the market is supposed to buy. At least that feels like what it means to me and the way they've positioned it.
Yeah, no, that's right. The difference between the 12 and the 12 Pro is fairly minute, to the point that you do wonder, you know, if there was any value in jumping up to that Pro, unless you really need that better camera. On that note, maybe it is worth jumping through all the phones now.
Yeah, cool. Just the last thing I wanted to reel off to be comprehensive. They've got faster chips, the A14 Bionic. They've got this new ceramic shield glass that apparently is unbreakable, but I bet you can find a way to break it. The interesting thing that they announced was MagSafe for the phones, which I think was one of the stupidest things in the world. But basically, rather than, like, in terms of wireless charging, if you stick a puck on the back of your phone, similar to if anyone here has an Apple Watch, that puck, but a big one for your phone right on the back to charge it wirelessly. And I think that was one of the biggest moves they made this year, because it basically hinted that the Lightning port's about to be superseded. It sounds like they've got to replace it.
Yeah, no, it does sound like it. Yeah, so it seems like that connector is going to be able to do most of what you need the Lightning port to do, except for data transfer.
Yeah, I wonder if they'll ever integrate data transfer into that port. I mean, they've done it with the iPads through the smart connector for the keyboard. Whether that's enough for, I guess, like, you know, photo transfers and whatnot from a laptop to a phone or vice versa, we'll have to see. But it does look like next year, or at least the year after that, there won't be a Lightning port. We'll have a fully portless iPhone for the first time ever. All right, Kai, on that note, let's get straight stuck into each of the iPhone models. So let's start with the smallest one. We've got the 12 mini. So that sits at 5.4 inches in terms of screen size. So it brings the full screen design that we know and love. It's roughly the same size as the iPhone SE that was launched earlier this year. The screen is obviously larger because it's a full screen design, but it really is that really small form factor. Like we said before, it's got feature parity with the 12, so literally everything is the same. It's got the OLED screens, upgraded cameras. It's got two cameras. We've got a wide angle, or the normal one, as well as an extra wide angle. The only thing that's different from what I've seen other than the screen size is that it's got a smaller battery. And so based on Apple's ratings, which is probably the best way we can measure it, is that it gives you 15 hours of video playback versus 17 hours. So not a huge drop, but 2 hours is a bit noticeable, especially if the 17 hours is normally what they call all-day battery life. It makes me think the 12 mini might not be able to last a full day anymore.
Yeah, no, that's when I was looking at that, it made sense for me to think about the mini because I'm coming from...
You're not buying a mini.
yeah, because I'm coming from an iPhone 6, so it's a much smaller form factor than what's on the market now if you compare it to, say, the 11 or the 11 Pro. So on that note, you know, it's something worth considering if you prefer that smaller form factor. But for me, you know, as our phones become more sophisticated, it becomes more than a phone where you're spending much more time looking through your Netflix, you're browsing documents and articles on it. For me, I think it's more compelling to get a bigger screen.
Yeah, I mean, let's be honest, I think it's really almost the same size as your 6, not the 6 plus, your 6. And so, I mean, I've always bought the biggest phone in the lineup for the last couple of years, mainly for the features, but those phones are so small now. You pick it up and it almost feels like a toy. That's your daily driver, and so you don't know, I guess, what big phones feel like, but they're so small, and I don't think, since, I guess, the phone industry slowly moved everyone up into at least medium-sized phones, not small-sized phones, the 12 mini really, really stands out as a really interesting product, really sitting at that small phone size. So I wonder what that means for the SE, because I thought that's what the SE originally targeted. The people who wanted a smaller phone weren't willing to break the bank to get, the latest and greatest features. But obviously, this sits at a higher price point than the SE.
Yeah, no, that's right. So I wonder if this is more of a 12 SE Pro. So it's the better version, but a smaller form factor from the iPhone SE. But yeah, I can see both sides of that argument around the form factor, because I prefer the smaller size because my phone usually stays in my pocket. I don't really use my phone much when I'm out and about. But at the same time, if you have an Apple Watch that pairs with your phone, then you're getting all your notifications through that watch anyway. So you could have a bigger phone and have it, you know, stay in your bag. And, you know, it would both kind of work.
Yeah, I mean, I had the 10, the original iPhone 10, and that was a smaller, much smaller form factor than what I have now with the 10S Max. And I really did enjoy the smaller form factor. It just slipped in your pocket. You could use it one-handed without any issues, or there was no fumbling around. Especially now that these are glass, you're always constantly worried that it's going to fall out and you're about $800 out of pocket to get a new glass panel. I mean, it does sound compelling, and especially if it's got the same features as the 12, which we'll touch on in a sec. For once, they're not penalizing you for wanting a smaller phone, right? Traditionally, if you want a smaller phone, it's like, great, you've got to get the normal iPhone, which doesn't have the same features as the Pro, which it doesn't right now, but the differences aren't that big. And it feels like, I don't know, it feels like maybe Apple finally grew up and said, all right, we've got to actually serve more people. We can't just keep trying to extract money out of everyone. Let's actually try and build a product that's actually really good to serve this niche of the market. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see where the balance of sales falls between the mini versus the other ones. So on that note, let's move into the iPhone 12, which is obviously the core product of the lineup. This is now 6.1 inches in terms of a screen size, so 0.7 inches bigger than the 12 mini. For people who are familiar with the recent phone lineups, it's the same size as last year's iPhone 11. But I guess the big upgrade, like we touched on before, is the OLED screen. It's still a dual camera camera system, so you've got the normal and the wide angle. Both of them have, I guess, improved lenses. Same thing as the 12 mini. I think this is a really good phone, to be honest. In summary, it's the phone for everyone. It isn't ridiculously expensive at the mid to low 1,000 range. And it's obviously got OLED now, which I think OLED is a really good upgrade, and it's great that they finally brought it down to the core phone. But what do you think, Kai?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. It is the phone for most of the market, and especially this year, because if you compare it to the 12 Pro, actually, you know, the difference is, you do wonder if you actually need it for a phone.
Yeah, I mean, what does this have? This has everything you need. It's got a great camera. It's got a great new design. It's got some interesting colors. It's this weird green, by the way, that I don't know. I've never seen anyone have a green phone before, but it's got a great camera. It's got, good all-day battery life. It's got the same new unbreakable glass panel as well. It's got support for MagSafe, whether you like that or not. It's got great all-day battery life. It's the same sort of weatherproofing as well. The only difference between this and the Pros now are the camera.
Yeah. And I think, so the 12 Pro, without jumping too much into it yet, there's an additional telephoto lens. Is that right?
Yep. So that's a zoom lens, as I like to call it. Telephoto always makes me think, what does that mean? Is that a telephone? It's basically the zoom lens that lets you zoom in, I think, 2 or 2.5 times. But to be honest, if you're coming from an 11 or a phone without a telephoto lens, you're not going to notice.
Yeah, no, that's right.
And most people who actually have the telephoto lens don't know that that lens does the zooming. They just know this is a camera system and it lets me zoom. They don't know that. And I guess that's good, right? I mean, it keeps it simple. You don't need to know which lens is being used. It's just it zooms and it zooms.
Yeah, no, that's right. And, you know, if the iPhone 11s were anything to go by, the iPhone 12 cameras will be more than adequate for what we're using it for because they're really, really good cameras as it is already.
Yeah, exactly. And I think I haven't actually paid that close attention to this yet because every year they release their, I think, shot with iPhone, I guess, marketing campaign where they take photos with the newest lineup and they've obviously got some with the normals and some with the pros. Last year, I think I saw the ones with just the 11 and you can't really, like, it's the same photo. It's the same lens as the pros.
Yeah, that's right. And I think on that note, you know, this during the event this year, what they've really tried to emphasize was more on the 12 Pro's night shot capabilities and also more the optical stabilization. So, you know, whether your hand's moving too much when you're taking the photo, it actually helps stabilizes those images. And I think that's the key point of difference.
Yeah, yeah. All right, let's get stuck into the 12 Pro then. And so this is where it starts to, the water starts to get really muddy. So this is the same size as the 12. It's the same 6.1-inch screen, which is different from last year where the 11 Pro was actually a smaller phone than the 11. It's got the same 5G chipset. It's got the same A14 Bionic chipset as well, which means you're not sacrificing on speed. You're not sacrificing on, horsepower. It's got the same screen. It's got the same design as well, but different materials. So the pros, they try to differentiate in terms of visuals and materials. So it's stainless steel instead of an aluminium border. It's much more shiny. It's much more durable. But one thing that I've noticed with the stainless steel frames is that they're much heavier as well. So like we said, it's got the same camera system as the 12 and the 12 mini in terms of the normal lens and the wide lens, but it now includes a telephoto lens, which lets people zoom in before. And we have to mention this, I don't know how much use it is, but it also has a new LiDAR, what is it called, a projector or whatnot. And apparently this helps with their portrait and computational photography because it can map, I guess, depth of what you're trying to take a photo of.
Yeah, that's right. And they first introduced the LiDAR through the iPad Pros. And that, you know, it has pretty nifty features around, you know, if you point your camera at certain things, you can actually measure the distance. So it'd be interesting to see how that, you know, how useful it is actually in terms of use cases and also improving, yeah, photography and, you know, images.
Well, you touched on it before, right? Like you said, that they're trying to differentiate. The one thing that they focused in on between the 12 versus the 12 Pro in the keynote was, I guess, that low light photography, right? And I think, especially low light portrait, I think is what they were talking about. So portrait in Apple world means that bokeh effect. So where you have someone's face in a photo that's nice and crisp and clear, but then the background, you know, looks all blur and it's kind of like, oh, we paid someone professional to take this photo. But in fact, you haven't. You're just using an iPhone. But, I think the LiDAR sensor is supposed to help with, I guess, isolating that person's head versus the background.
Yeah, yeah. I think the other thing that it also does is it detects how much light is in each of the areas around, around the image that the lens is capturing. So my understanding of how it works is it effectively shoots light at objects and it waits for the time it comes back to the camera in terms of reflection. And so I think that ties in with the AI to figure out, okay, you know, there are spots that's a bit underexposed, so we need a light, we need to you know, enhance the images, that part of the image, so that everything looks proportionate.
Huh, I never thought about it that way. I always thought it was just for depth, but maybe you're right. I mean, we're not photographers, either of us, so we'll see how the photos come out if we can get our hands on these. I mean, at a price point, we didn't talk about the price point, obviously. It's $1,699 now. Still, so what is that? What's the premium on the iPhone 12?
$350, I think.
I mean, is that a lot?
That's $350. It is on the biggest scheme of things, given that you never just buy the iPhone, right? You buy the iPhone, you have to get a case, you have to get a screen protector, you might get Apple Care.
You also need to buy a charger brick as well this year, don't forget.
No, that's right. That is an interesting one. You know, quick segue. What are your thoughts about that?
Look, it's such an Apple thing to do. And I hate to get into this conversation, but it feels like it's a very Tim Cook thing to do as well.
Yeah.
Like he is a penny counter sometimes. But, I mean, I like the way they positioned it. So they had Lisa Jackson come out like they did for the Apple Watch saying, you know, there's all these bricks that people have, which is not wrong. We're all using the same bricks. So why are we giving you a new one every year? There's a lot of plastic. There's a lot of waste going into that. So we're not going to include it as default anymore in the box. If you need it, you can go out and buy one. And so that all makes sense. But I guess from a consumer perspective, you'd expect that to translate to a lower price.
Yeah, yeah. And I think we did touch on this earlier. So instead of lowering the price, given that they've added in that 5G, which you'd assume it's a bit more expensive than what to produce than a 4G phone, then it's almost as if they've used that as one way to offset the cost increase. Possibly.
Yeah, but how much could that little brick possibly cost?
Well, they did touch on, you know, the logistics side of things as well, right? So you get to fit a lot more into a container. So, you know.
Clearly, you've drunk the Kool-Aid.
I know there are haters on this. I know, you know, people don't see the logic in providing that USB-C to USB-C cable, given that people's bricks are usually USB-A. Connectors, but I understand. Like I kind of, yeah. So I have drank the Kool-Aid, but I think, you know, the mind frame is, if you have a brick, you'll have a USB-A to USB. Well, sorry, to a Lightning cable already, right? So the USB-C to USB-C is more of a future-proof. It's not USB-C to USB-C. It's USB-C to Lightning, isn't it?
It's USB-C to Lightning. They don't have USB-C. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's right. So the USB-C to Lightning is more of a future-proof because you're more than likely not have one, but you'd have a USB-A to USB or USB-A to Lightning cable. So I think that makes sense. I also agree with, you know, all the environmental stuff. Sure, it's a cost savings, but yeah, like you're always gonna get haters in these sorts of approach.
Yeah, look, at the end of the day, I don't think it's the end of the world. It's only if anyone's gonna get away with it, it's Apple. Because, you know, they have such a good base of keyboard warriors such as you to go out and defend them in terms of why they got rid of it. But I think it's fine. At the end of the day, I've got heaps. I mean, I'm not going to lie. In the last three or four phones, I haven't opened the bricks that I've got. So I've got plenty to use. But at the same time, like, wireless charging, I haven't gotten on the wireless charging bandwagon, but I think that'll become increasingly prominent in the way I charge my iPhone. But if I need to go, I'll go buy one. If at the end of the day, if you know, we're a very privileged segment of the market where we're talking about $1,000, almost $2,000 phones, and I almost buy one every year. The reality is that we're quite lucky in that I can go out and buy another $20 brick. Sure, is it the best use of my money? Probably not. Should Apple have included it? Maybe, but it's not like it's gonna, you know, send me into bankruptcy or anything.
Yeah, and to be fair, if I needed a brick, I'd still steer away from the Apple bricks because the delivery, like the wattage delivery, is still fairly slow. I'd rather go buy a third party, say from Belkin. It's probably around the same price, but it actually charges a lot quicker.
I think the USB-C ones are a big. I think they're 20 watts now.
All right. Okay.
Yeah.
So corrected.
Yeah, I think. I don't know. I haven't bought one because I'm a tight ass. But yeah, I think they're 20 watts now. So the USB charger brick has always, since they introduced it, I think last year or the year before, have always been a fast charge brick because USB-C just supports that higher wattage. But yeah, I mean, I think it's good that what they did for the environment because, like they said, it translates to a lot of, I think they use the metric, a lot of vehicles on the road, which at the end of the day is true. But I thought it was really cool how they popped Lisa Jackson on the top of that on the top of that building with all those solar panels to announce that, and then it just looked like they just left her. I mean, I think I shared with you that email that someone sent to Tim Cook saying, "Hey, I think you left Lisa Jackson up there. I'm just checking in that she's all right." I think that was hilarious.
Yeah, that was pretty funny.
All right, so let's move on to the big surfboard iPhone this year, the iPhone 12 Pro Max. They've really got to clean up. Their marketing team really needs to be cleaned out, by the way. I'm really sick of these names. So, again, this one's really interesting. It's the biggest phone in the lineup this year. It's even bigger than the Pro Max from last year. It's now at 6.4 inches. It's got the same 5G chipset and the A14 Bionic as well. Again, the same OLED screen and the same design as the Pro and the non-Pros. Obviously, this one, they try to differentiate, like I said before, with the stainless steel that's shiny versus the matte aluminium that the 12 and the 12 mini get. But it's interesting that this year they've differentiated the 12 Pro and the 12 Pro Max in terms of features. And so the Pro Max gets a different camera setup. So the normal lens, which is the one that we normally take photos with, actually is a different camera lens. It's actually a different camera sensor, I think, where it has much bigger pixels, which means it lets much more light in and obviously is much better in low light performance. So when you're in, you know, a dark room or at night, apparently it helps with, I guess, photo taking. It also comes with a different image stabilization system, which means when your hand's shaking around or you're moving around, it should be much more stable and not look like, you know, your hand's about to shake off. But in terms of the other lenses, the wide angle is exactly the same. So you've got parity there. So it's interesting that the Mini, the 12, the Pro, and the Pro Max have the exact same wide-angle lens as each other, but it's actually got a slightly different telephoto lens to the Pro as well, which lets you zoom in to 2.5 times versus 2. And so it's interesting that they differentiated the 12 Pro and the Pro Max. Last year, they kept the Pro and the Pro Max the same in terms of features. It was literally just a bigger screen.
Yeah, and I do wonder on that note if it's whether that they have more space to play with the Pro Max, just, you know, being able to fit more things into that larger form factor, if that allowed them to put in a bit more features. But I do also really, like, I like the way they presented the Pro Max at the event, where it's a professional filmmaker filming, you know, a bunch of horses running around, and that's exactly it. Like, you really only need the Pro Max if you're going to that extent.
Yeah, and the operative word that they use there is need. I mean, right? Like, I mean, the iPhones, it's undeniable. Like, they're actually really good. The way I view it now, the iPhones in general aren't a phone anymore. It's a camera. You buy an iPhone for the camera now. You don't buy it because it's 5G, even though they said 5G about a billion times. You don't buy it because, you know, it's a great phone. All phones make calls the exact same way. You buy the iPhone because of the camera now, and you buy the Pro Max even more is if you want that really high-end camera that is, I won't say cutting edge, because some Android cameras have, better spec'd modules, but I feel like if you want the best camera that Apple puts on an iPhone right now, you go for the 12 Pro Max.
Yeah, so I think, you know, if you were considering between the 12 Pro and the 12 Pro Max, I think that the key two things would be, one, the better camera, whether you need that or not, and the second one's definitely the larger screen size. So, you know, whether you're happy to lug something that's much bigger around, or do you actually need it to, you know, read or watch videos from it.
Yeah, the other thing I'll throw in there is the 12 Pro Max gives you the biggest battery as well. And a lot of people don't think about it, but it actually gives you probably an extra couple hours in terms of day-to-day use on a daily basis. And so that's one of the reasons why I've always gone for the biggest phone. I mean, it is huge. Sometimes doesn't fit in my pants. I mean, if I go for a run, if you think of those small pockets that sometimes running shorts or whatnot come with, the phone doesn't fit in there. And it's really sad. And so it's great that I have a watch for that. But I'm willing to sacrifice that bigger phone footprint for a bigger screen, because when you're watching, you know, movies on Netflix or whatnot, or just surfing the web, it's much easier to have a bigger screen. Obviously, the cameras are really important. I prefer to always have the best camera you can get, because, you know, cameras are there to capture the moment. And the reality is, once a moment's passed, it's passed. You can never relive it. And the best way you can sort of relive it or reminisce is through photos or through videos. And so I'm always happy to fork out more for a better camera if that means I can have better captures later to sort of reflect on. And so, yeah, I think for me, I really like the 12 Pro Max. This year, the decision between the Pro and the Pro Max was much harder because, like we said, there's so much parity between the two models this year. Is that I don't know if I could have justified that extra couple hundred dollars. What is it, an extra $150 for the
150?
Yeah, $150 for the Pro to the Pro Max. I mean, $150 in the scheme of things isn't a lot in terms of what we're talking about with these prices, but this year you really start to think, what am I getting for that $150 versus in the past?
Yeah. So I guess in summary, you know, there's a lot of differences or difference in features across these four phones. So let's quickly go through, I think, what the main differences are. So 12 mini to 12, smaller phone, possibly smaller battery, but everything else the same.
Yeah. And I think this is really, I think you only buy this phone if you really want a smaller phone.
Yeah, that's right.
Otherwise, I would be telling most people to go for the 12.
I know. I was just saying, with the 12, you know, it is a bigger phone, especially if you're coming from a smaller, you know, iPhone 8, for example. But I think you'll get used to it. So I've played around with mates' iPhones 11s and et cetera, and it's actually not too bad. I actually like the bigger real estate of a screen that you get when you're using your phone.
Yeah, and so I guess at the 12 mini, you're looking at $1,199. So like we said, this is the cheapest phone. It's the smallest phone. Despite the lower price tag, I think you should only get this if you want a smaller phone. If you're looking for the cheapest phone you can get that's an iPhone, I would steer you towards the SE because that, I think, does that come in at sub 1,000?
It does, yeah. It's like $700 or $800.
Yeah, so I would point you towards that. So the mini really is for those who want a small form factor. What about the 12, Kai?
The 12? What about it?
Well, the 12 really, I think, in terms of who it's for, like you said, it's for most people. It's the middle size. It sits at a reasonable price point at $1,349, which is pretty expensive for a phone. But the reality is most of us keep our phones for 3 to 5 years now, right? You don't see many people going through phones every 1 or 2 years now. 2 years is probably the lower end in terms of the shortest time frame people actually swap. You do get people who swap annually. But I think 3 to 4 years at $1,349 is pretty good because you get pretty much the same camera, the best camera you can get in an iPhone in 2020, and it doesn't break the bank.
Yeah, that's right. So I guess, you know, if you're pretty sold on the 12, the question that's definitely lingering in your mind is whether you should jump on the 12 Pro for an extra, $250? And, you know, the key differences, as we've covered, would be...
$350?
Yeah. Oh, wow. Math is not good today. $350. So it is fairly significant between the two. And what you're getting would be better camera. I think everything else is the same, isn't it? You get a better build quality.
Yeah, you get the stainless steel band versus the aluminium. It's obviously heavier, but it's a lot more sturdier. I really like the stainless steel versus the aluminium. But if you're going to stick your phone in the case, you're not going to notice.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's right. So, you know, The real question here is, do you need that extra telephoto lens?
Yeah, and I think I think a lot of people use their phone to take a lot of photos, especially iPhone users. And so I guess have a think about what you're coming from. If you're coming from an 11 or something that doesn't have a telephoto lens, I would strongly recommend that you go to the 12 rather than the Pro. If you've had something with a telephoto lens and you actually... if you reflect on it and think that you actually do zoom in and press that 2x button a fair bit, or if you take a lot of portrait photos, I think about the Pro, but given that the screen size is the same now and everything else is the same, maybe have a think about whether that $350 could be better spent on something else, I think.
Yeah, no, that's right. And so for me, you know, when I was looking through the iPhone 11 generation of phones, I thought the 11 was pretty adequate for my needs. But this time around, as I'm about to upgrade, I'm actually leaning more towards the 12 Pro. One, because yes, there is a price difference, but there is a better camera, and it's something that I'll be using to take most of my photos, even when I travel. So it's something that I do want in my pocket, and I do tend to use my phone for I don't tend to upgrade my phone often, so this iPhone 6 Plus.
You're using a 6.
Yeah, exactly right. It's, you know, 6 years running. It's pretty impressive. I'm pretty happy with it.
No, you dropped it. You broke it. Don't know. You're on your second 6.
A couple of times. Anyway, so I think I'd be keen to lean on the 12 Pro, and it just, you know, makes sense to have everything in one. Yes, it is $350, but over time, you know, over 5 years, it's pretty negligible if you think about it that way.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. And I guess the message I would say is if you can afford to pay an extra $350 for the 12 Pro, I would say get it, because you do get that extra telephoto lens and it's a much nicer feeling phone. But for those who are maybe thinking, oh, that $350 is just a little bit too much, but I want a really good phone, the 12 is a really good phone this year. It's as good as the 12 Pro. It's just if you have the extra, then obviously tip it into the Pro if you can. So for me, I think it's a good segue into the last one around the 12 Pro Max. That's probably the one that I'm going for. It's a big phone bill at one starting price of $1,849 for, I think, 128 gigabytes. But I currently have a 10S Max, so I'm used to the big form factor. Is it a little bit too big for me? Probably. But the reality is, depending on how we rebound from COVID, a phone usually sits in my pocket or sits in my bag or whatnot. So that's fine. Doesn't always have to sit in my pants. And when I do use the phone, I do prefer to have a bigger screen, whether that be for videos or for text or, you know, reading the news or whatnot. So I really do like having the bigger screen real estate. But the key thing that's really pushing me towards the Pro Max is really the camera system. I mean, like I said, it is marginally better than the 12 and the 12 Pro. It has the extra telephoto lens. It has a LiDAR sensor. But the incremental improvement on the normal lens in terms of the bigger pixels and apparently better low light performance, I think that's going to push me towards the Pro Max more than anything. But it's a lot of money. I probably will end up getting the 512 gigabyte as well. Not because it's the most expensive one. I really don't want to pay that much for a phone, especially in the recession times that we're in. But in terms of storage, if I'm going to be using this phone to take a lot of photos and videos, I'd rather have the space to store those photos and videos on the device as well. I mean, 512 is, if I get to 512 at the end of this phone life cycle, it probably says I need to clean up my photos more than anything. But I think that's the one I'll end up going for.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Actually, that you made a good point around the capacity. So I was looking at the 12 and the 12 Pro. I thought the difference was a bit smaller. And I think it's because we're not comparing the same capacity. So for the 12, $1,349 gets you the 64 gig version, whereas the $1,699 12 Pro gets you the 128 gig. And so if I'm comparing like for like, the 12 is actually $1,429. So the difference is about $270, which, you know, it brings the gap a little bit closer. So it's up to you to, you know, it's compelling enough to jump to the 12 Pro for the better camera at, you know, $200, $270 compared to the 12.
Yeah. And I think the like I said before, the pros are good and they are, I don't know. I keep flip-flopping on this. I feel like they justify their price premium, but then they don't justify it that much enough. But there's almost a part of me, and I'm in a lucky position where I can fork out for a phone like this, right? Not everyone can drop $2,000 on a phone. But I feel like I don't want to miss out on, if this is such an improvement on the camera, and if I'm going to have this for a couple of years, which I probably should, and I should stop burning through phones like they're paper, I should probably try and get the best one to see... To hold me out of the next couple of years.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it's you know, dependent on your preference and what you ultimately can or can't justify. But I think you're right. You know, the 12 and the 12 Pro is still $270. That's the cost of AppleCare if you're afraid of breaking your phone. You know, and it is costly to replace screens these days. So it's weighing up that difference, I guess.
Yeah. And so in summary, I guess what we landed on was the 12 minis for those who want a small phone, happy to sacrifice a little bit of battery probably. The 12 is the phone for most people. So you get a really good camera, you get pretty much a really well-rounded phone. The 12 Pro are for those who want a little bit of a better camera, but that's really only a telephoto lens. But for those who want the best camera you can get on an iPhone right now, it's the 12 Pro Max. But you're going to have to be willing to put up with the really big screen real estate. Although for some, that's a plus. But I guess that's one of the drawbacks. I guess the last thing I wanted to touch on in this is... we're both getting a new iPhone this year, right?
Yep.
What color are you getting?
It's a tough one. I do like the blue. I prefer the midnight green. Like
I'm so sad they got rid of the midnight green.
Yeah, if they had the midnight green, I'd jump on that straight away. With the blue, I do like it, but I'll end up probably getting a case. And because now the cases do have a pretty big window for the camera, if I got, say, you know, a product red case, for example, it's going to look quite jarring if it had the blue and the red go together. So I'll probably land on a black, or, you know, the gray, whatever the color is now.
Don't get black. I think, what do they call it? They called it graphite this year.
Yeah, yeah. So I guess I'll get that just so it'll go with the cases. But again, I haven't decided yet.
Go with the white, man. The white's so much better. The white's classic. That's classic Apple. White, silver, shiny. That's what you want to go for, man. If you're not going to get the blue, I think you go for the white, not the black. I mean, the black's not even black this year. I'm looking at it now on screen. It's gray. I mean, they called it graphite, but it's gray. It looks hideous.
It is pretty different from the other year's black or gray. But yeah, you know, looking at the Pacific blue again, I'll probably land with that. I'm a sucker for something in that shade.
I really liked the green last year. I'm so sad they got rid of it. I wish they had the green alongside the blue.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the blue, like, I'm looking at it, I thought it would be a little bit more of a navy blue, but it's got this weird greenish tint, yeah, to it, doesn't it?
It's not really a dark navy, is it? Which you'd expect. But
it's like as the name implies, Pacific. It's like this weird oceany, like, almost like it's got moss or seaweed in there. Yeah. Like, it's kind of great. I want to see what they look like in person, because they always look really different versus the renders versus what they look in real life. But I don't know. The blue looks like it's probably going to be the one for me, just because it's a little bit different. I've had white. I had a white Tennis Max. I've had a black 10. And then before that, I had silver as well. So it's probably time to branch away from the monocolor.
Yeah, get something different.
Yeah. Nah, cool. So let's wrap that up today. I mean, there was a lot we covered there in terms of the iPhone and the Apple event. As always, if you guys have time, give us a review on Apple Podcasts or shoot us an email. Love to get some feedback on you guys. If you have any questions on what we spoke about today, feel free to get in touch. We're on Twitter, and our email will drop in the show notes as well. But hit subscribe and tune in next time. Thanks, guys.